Burton Radio.
I'm Ray Burton, and welcome to another Let's Talk Gardening podcast. Our mission is to provide listeners with interesting, informative topics and up-to-date information. My co-host is Faye Caro, an award-winning gardener, horticulturalist and media presenter. Faye's passion is educating people. Oh, and she loves bugs a lot too. My passion is simply beautiful, healthy gardens. And together, each week, we cover many great gardening subjects.
Saturday morning's come around again, and it's time for Let's Talk Gardening.
And here we are. It's 6 minutes past eight. And the lovely Faye is sitting right opposite me, and I'm very privileged, and it's a pleasure to be here to sit in for Ray. How are you, Faye?
I'm very well, thank you. Yes, as you just said, you're sitting in for Ray. Mm. She's had a minor procedure, So hopefully she's resting up, feeling better, and kicking back a little bit.
Well, we hope that she's listening, and we hope that you are indeed very well. And it is a pleasure to be here, and don't worry, we'll try and keep things normal while you're gone, Ray, and you will be back here in the chair next week. So, here we are. What a week it has been, Faye.
What a week it has been. It's been a busy week on the gardening calendar, Chris, mm-hmm. and that's what we're here to talk about.
So, right.
I'd love to do a little bit of a recap. When we finished up here yesterday, I was off home to prepare for a talk that I was doing up at Kalamunda yesterday, mm-hmm. Sunday, the next day. And it was great to see and meet so many of our Curtin listeners up there. But the event, the weather forecast last Saturday was thunderstorms and lightning and rain, and it was touch and go. I can't imagine how the organisers, Andrew and Mandy, felt that night, as well as all the exhibitors and stallholders. But true to form, gardeners just hold this vision of it'll be all right on the day, and it really was.
I'm getting that feeling too.
It was hot and muggy, but it wasn't terribly windy, and it certainly wasn't thunderstormy and lightning. So
it's interesting
we were
how
blessed.
Muggy it's been, isn't it? It's been really muggy with that low cloud. I was out in Kambalda this week, and it was grey, low cloud, so much so the aircraft couldn't even land at Kambalda Airport.
Wow.
But the temperature was down, so low. I mean, it felt like wintertime, and it just was so unexpected.
We've had a little spattering of cooler temperatures at night, mm-hmm. I feel. And the gardens are just, they're just breathing that moisture in. I've got salvias that are going off. I've seen bees bopping around them that I hadn't seen previously. It's just a lovely turn. And when I wandered the garden this morning, I found a few things that I thought, gee, you guys are doing really well, like, it feels like we're going into that next phase, and it is autumn on the calendar.
You can feel it. You can feel it. I mean, even the overnight temperatures are dropping, and across this weekend, even though the East Coast is certainly heating up this weekend, receiving what we had about a week ago, it's mild. Sunny today, 27, 29 tomorrow, then all next week, 31, 29, 32. So there definitely is a change in the air, isn't there?
I think so, yes. It'll still bounce around a bit. Mm. We'll still get some hot weather, but the sun will be in a different position, but it was all okay on the day, and the event went ahead without a hitch. It was so well attended. Like, gardeners, whether you're a buyer or a seller or even both, it's a bit like a plant swap, I suppose. Meeting up with all our like-minding folk. Mind you, I don't get out of the marquee. I'm sort of there to introduce people, and we had Millie Ross come across. Lisa Passmore was there, Sabrina, Darren, Neville, Darren, you name it. It was a great lineup. And Mel did a great talk on rewilding suburbia, and her talk's all about insects. You know, if you don't think insects are your friend in the garden, you need to look again. Honestly, you do.
Since you've been talking about it, and I've become more garden conscious in the last couple of years, I'm always out and about looking at them, looking for them, more than just waiting for them to appear in my line of sight, going looking and seeing what they're doing.
I know. And Chris, you know, once we change that mindset, like once we go to the other side, I think we relax more about things. We're not so fearful, and our approach is different. It's more relaxed. We don't fear the aphid on our roses anymore. We get excited because we look to see who will come because of that. So, and that same recipe or method follows on for other bugs that come in, be they new or old. And we're getting new ones all the time.
Did you get some rain yesterday morning?
Oh, only enough to move the dust on the leaves. Mm. Not off the leaves, just on the leaves.
It was pretty intense where I am, but it was so welcome. You know, about 15 minutes of constantly down on the coast.
Oh.
And it was just...
Stop it.
It was delicious. All right. Okay. Fine. It's 8:10. Now, listen, good listener, we're talking gardening till 10, but do not think that you, oh, well, I'll wait for somebody else because maybe they'll ask that question first and then I won't have to ring. Ring now. This is the best time to talk to Bev and you can get on the program. And the number, if you need to know, is 94841927. Alternatively, if you're on your way out and you can't wait around on the phone, and we try to keep you waiting as little time as possible, gardening@curtainfm.com.au is the email address.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, Chris, for a recap on the second event of the week, and this was put on by Open Gardens WA, and it was at a lovely little croquet club in Floreat. It was a flora quiz and high tea.
Oh, nice.
So the ladies frocked up and attended the event, and it was amazing. Fine china, three-tiered.
Yeah, the ones with all the little pettifours and the sandwiches.
Well,
and,
there was beautiful, fluffy, fresh sandwiches, Portuguese custard tarts, homemade sausage rolls, sweets. Oh, it was just to die for.
Did you frock up?
Well, no, I got a bit caught out, but I managed to get there, so never mind. But the quiz as well, I've never been to such a fun quiz. The questions were incredible. Like, you know, I knew I was challenged, but I knew some of them. Whereas often you go to a quiz night and they're just out of your league, you know. It's no fun because they're too hard. This was a lot of fun. There was a bit of rivalry with the next table. There was a fun music and quiz on the table as well. So you sort of have to work your time management, listening ears. Don't talk when Belinda's giving out the questions. It was absolutely fantastic. Hats off. I hope they put it on their calendar for next year.
Because you'll want to frock up and be there and eat all those delicious, delicious animals.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
Fantastic.
And then, and lastly, the third event on my garden calendar this week was a talk at the Wildflower Society. And they're at the Wetland Centre in Bibra Lake. And the guest speakers this week were Jean and Fred Hort, who are very accomplished. They've been research associates for the museum and they collect for the herbarium. And they have just been moved up to become, they have a promotion, research adjuncts. And they gave a talk about new finds out in the field. Both insect and flora, this is where they come together, you know, like we really need to value and appreciate all of the natural world. But they've had some new finds, very interesting discoveries, and they've had plants and insects named after them.
Really?
So, yeah, they are gardening royalty.
That's something special, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
To know
yes.
your name has been immortalised with an insect.
Mm.
Nice.
But yes, Wildflower Society is valuable for imparting information and they meet monthly. All of the societies offer an in-depth amount of knowledge that you just can't glean from anywhere else. Chris.
Sharing it.
Networking. Yeah. You know, you
and willingly receive, sharing knowledge, as you say. Otherwise, you could read books forever, but when you get it face-to-face and they're so willing to impart it, that's so special.
It's magic. Yeah. Yes, there's something about human interconnection.
Now, who knows the topics that we're going to be talking about today? That really is up to the listener to call us and discuss them. But tell us about the guest.
Well, Mark Tuchek, a lot of our listeners would know him. He's been around for years. He's worn many different hats. He was involved with Jomus for many, many years. And he took on a new water plants business But he also started up the Tucker Bush range, which was bringing bush tucker plants, Australian indigenous plants, to the market. And what he doesn't know is, not worth knowing, I guess. Bush Food for Beginners is a book he put together during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just his journey is inspirational. Like, we never know what new venture he's on.
So the listener has a chance between now and 10 o'clock, when he gets here, when he's in the studio, to really pick his brains about bush tucker.
Yes, and they've put programs into schools as well. So, you know, the education, respecting our indigenous native plants and their uses is, you know, should be more on our radar than what it is.
Bush food for beginners. So we're not talking about eating so much. That's the final reward, but we're talking about how to grow it first.
Well, absolutely. Everything associated with it and how it can fit into gardens today, their requirements, because, you know, during the week, someone said to me, Faye, I was looking at my bromeliads, and it was actually Troy, and he said, I was listening to you talk about the umbrella for your plants and what will I do for next year, because we'll be in that same position again. Just because the weather has changed a little bit, don't forget that sun will be as fierce next year as it was this year.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do is plan ahead and create that canopy.
Good. He'll be here soon. I have a little bit of information. Thank you, Warren and Oakford, for calling this one in. There's been a major traffic accident, a crash by any other description, on Anketell Road on the west side of Kwinana Freeway. It has just happened. So if you are heading along Anketell Road on the west side of Kwinana Freeway, I don't know any close intersections at this stage, there has been a major traffic crash. It would be good if you could avoid that area. Okay, time is 17 minutes past 8. We did have a call sitting on line 1, but it's disappeared, Bev. I don't know what happened to it, but it's gone away. It's certainly not on my board here. We'll come back to, hopefully, David and Linwood, who wanted to talk about weeds.
Going to start popping up with the event of rain and that little change in the climate, we're going to have weeds popping up. So, you know, it's a great time to get out in the garden right now.
Yep.
Plan for them.
Yeah.
There probably won't be too much there for you to worry about right at the moment. But think about how you're going to manage them. So whether it's your veggie garden, your rose garden, a native garden, what was your weed problem last year? What were those weeds that were a problem? Sometimes just going through and carpeting the ground with a thick mulch will help, but what about creating a living mulch?
Yeah.
Something that is a ground cover that will give you a buffer. And one of my favourite ground cover styles would be a plant that covers the ground, spreads sideways, mm-hmm. but also grows to about 15 centimetres.
Yep.
Anything much lower than that, the light actually penetrates through. And you can still get weeds, and there's nothing worse than trying to pick weeds out of a ground cover.
Yeah,
it's just hard work. So get something that will stand a little higher but give that coverage across the ground. It also protects from the harsh sun and provides habitat. So
good news.
Living mulch.
Weeds could be a big discussion. Unfortunately, David couldn't stay on the line. Apparently, he had to go out. But we're ready to talk weeds with you. You just have to give us a call on 94841927. David perhaps should have sent an email, you know. We could have dealt with this question had he sent an email to gardening@curtainfm.com.au. 19 minutes past 8. Curtain Radio. We do have official information from the Main Roads Department, Faye, about that crash I was mentioning, the Warren called about. The crash is on Anketell Road, which is now closed. in both directions between Mandoggalup Road and the Kwinana Freeway in Mandoggalup. So anyone in that area, please, the crash is on Anchortel Road. It's closed in both directions between Mandoggalup Road and the Kwinana Freeway. Traffic is heavy on approach, and please, the main roads and the police are asking you to find an alternative route. So you're up to date. We'll let you know more about that as we go along. It's 22 minutes past 8. Shall we take our first call?
Yes, we shall.
Welcome to the program, Roberta in Thornley. Good morning.
Oh, yes, good morning. Look, I've this thing about the weed problem, yes, I do have a weed problem. I've got a ground cover that I planted probably 12 months ago. But I did, well, I thought I got all the old Kuchinette out, but that keeps coming through. But so I just have to get out there over the weekend again and get on my hands and knees and dig it all out again. But my other question is, say, I was given a frangipani and I want to put it into like a bigger pot. It's okay to do it now, isn't it?
Yes, now would be fine. Yeah.
Absolutely. I thought it would. Yeah. I just had to double check. Mm-hmm.
Where is the cooch growing in your garden, Roberta?
Well, see, this was grass that was planted in this unit when I moved in here, and because it just became all weeds, and then I dug it all out, and I planted another ground cover quite a few years ago now, but it kind of had its life. So then a friend of mine, she's got, and it grows beautiful, this ground cover. You have to keep, I trim it and give it to people to plant in their garden. It gets a pink flower. I don't know the name.
Is it a succulent?
Yes, it's kind of like a succulent.
Baby sunrose, little pink.
Yes.
Yep.
It's very pretty, but, I've got a... I don't know where these weeds, I mean, apart from the weeds that come, I've got to get out there and dig it all up. But, you know, I'm trying to get, and I thought I'd pull out by the roots every time that I do it, this blasted creature, but it keeps coming back. But anyway.
It does go deep, and unless you, and if you pull it and it breaks, it will come back again. So last weekend we spoke to Digby, and one of his suggestions was cardboard. So if you have the chance from the beginning to put down some cardboard and then mulch on top of that, you block the sunlight and the cooch can't come through. If it is around the base of the plant, then it's very hard to separate the two. But
I know. Tell me about it. I have to watch what I'm yanking out. I get so annoyed because it only takes about a week and it's all back again, and I get so. But anyway, now that's a job for the weekend. Now that it's a bit cooler, because I'm up extra early anyway. But
all right.
Good, I can go and get some potting mix today. Because I was given a pretty pink one, and I don't have a pink frangipani.
Oh, nice.
Last weekend, and I thought I'm going to put it into a nice bigger pot that I have, and I thought I could do it now, so I'm going to go out.
All right, you enjoy that, Roberta. Thanks very much for your call.
Thanks, Faye. Thanks, okay. Bye.
Bye. Well, there you go. 25 minutes past 8. Don't hesitate. 9484 1927. If you've got questions about weeds, if you've got questions about anything to do with gardening, this is your moment between now and 10 o'clock. Faye is here to take your messages and to answer your questions live on air, but we also do get emails, and you've got a few.
Yes, I have got a few in front of me. And this is timely. This has come in from Mike. It came in yesterday. And he says, though throughout the summer he sprayed his roses weekly with a variety of chemicals, all to no avail. I have 50 plus roses, and unless I can find a cure for this problem, I see no alternative but to dig them out, as my neighbour has done. Do you know of any ongoing research into this pest and the likelihood of something that works to control or eradicate them? I listen to your program every Saturday morning and have heard you mention spraying them with water several times a day. This is not a solution I find appealing or practice unless you have nothing better to do. I understand, Mike, and this has been on my mind since I saw this email yesterday. How disappointing it is to have that fight to put all that effort into 50 beautiful roses only to have them destroyed by an infestation of a new pest in recent years, the chili thrips. Now, the reason that we say spraying with water several times a day, because it can change the environment. So understanding the life cycle of the pest, however, I do not know of any ongoing research, but what we've learned is that they are very active through the summer hotter months. They like dry conditions. Hence, if we can spread a little bit of water around, then that can help, particularly in the middle of the day. It changes the environment. They're less likely to want to live there. And water is a much nicer solution than spraying chemicals. I can't imagine how much time, effort and money Mike would have spent challenging this. And with 40-something degree days, many of our days in February, it would not have been nice.
And water's not cheap either. Wouldn't ladybird solve this problem?
Well, I'm getting to that, Chris.
Sorry.
So one of the things that we know about the chili thrips is that at 38 degrees, they can't survive. So I'm not sure at what point they would have been. Perhaps it's eggs in the soil. If the soil doesn't get to 38 degrees, you know, you may have a second batch coming. You have choices. What I think is the risk here is that by using a variety of chemicals and ongoing, the chili thrips may have developed resistance. And that's why there are careful guidelines about the use of insecticides. So if that's the case, we know that there are many hosts. It's not just roses in the garden. So if you've got other hosts in the garden, you can maybe eradicate them from the roses, but they can still come back because they're harbouring elsewhere. Now, I talk a lot about insects on the program and how insects can be your friend. Ladybirds may or may not. This was a new pest that arrived a few years ago and it took hold, and we were hearing reports right across Perth. The good news is we're getting less reports and people are taking on a range of strategies. Now, I would recommend that, Mike, you go and visit somewhere like Patsy Durack's Rose Garden and or Melville's Rose Nursery and have a look at how they manage their roses. They have managed to keep them at bay. Now, Patsy uses some probiotic products in her garden. She will not use insecticides. And she is managing to save her roses. Melville's Rose Garden have a strategy that I love, because who doesn't love a pretty garden? And their garden is jam-packed full of flowering plants that complement the roses. You know, that's a win-win. The benefit of having some of those plants is that they harbour the good guys. So even when the chili thrips arrive, now we don't know exactly who targets them, but there are hoverflies, there are lacewings, there are mantids, there are flower spiders and ladybirds. So a lot of these will target soft insects. They're suckers. They take the juice out of them. The lacewing larvae actually pile the dead skins on their back. Mm. The good guys are amazing and they're very resourceful. Now, an example that happened in my garden one day when I was trimming back my roses, I actually had ladybirds flying in around me and I thought, this is really bizarre. I don't have aphids on my roses. And on closer inspection, I found ladybirds inside the flowers of the red salvias that have been in my garden since 2007. But inside of the red salvia flowers were a few aphids. So they act as bank plants. The red salvias had some aphids. The ladybirds came in for them. But what that means is, when the aphids arrive on the roses, boom, I have an army there that are waiting to breed up. So you won't have ladybirds in your garden if you don't have food for them. Ladybird flies in, has a look around. Oh, there's an infestation of aphids there. I'll lay some eggs so that when my larvae hatch, they've got something to eat. the lacewing larva, and the lacewings are very happy in amongst the alyson plants. White alyson makes a beautiful border. Yellow flowers in the garden, for example, marigolds or calendulas, attract certain insects. They can attract thrips. So having other plants that keep them away from your roses might help. You know, some of the roses are more susceptible than others. Maybe get rid of the ones that are not handling things very well, and maybe put in some plants that will act as a bank, some salvias. You can use, you could add some edibles to your garden. In my bucket of flowers this morning, I've brought in a flower stem of the garlic chives. They have white flowers. I've brought in some perennial basil. It has spikes of white flowers that look like salvia. That brings in a group of native bees as well. Let's create pollinator pockets that harbour the good bugs. You can grow carrots and let them flower. They're beautiful. They're like Queen Anne's lace. Let's think more about what we can do. And it will take time. I can't say that this will happen overnight. I don't use insecticides around my roses. I thoroughly enjoy sitting watching all the different insects and who comes in because of them. And I've got a bug hotel nearby. So
you've created an anti insecticide environment, allowing the natural world to take care of the
situation. Well, and I embrace some of the pests because they bring in insect life that I haven't seen before. Yeah. There's all these levels of biodiversity. There's hoverfly. There's a range of different hoverflies. It's not just one hoverfly. And, you know, I could go on. That's a whole subject in itself, Chris.
Well, I think you've certainly given a very a lot of inspiration to that particular emailer. And if they don't take your advice and step out there.
And we were talking about how when we change our mindset, how you you actively look for insect life in your garden now. You know, to sit there with your cup of tea without that fear of, there's an aphid on my rose, you know.
You know the army's going to come to your defence.
How long will it take? Exactly. Well, you know, it depends if the good guys are actually already living in your garden or if they're your neighbours or they have to fly from down the street. Yeah. But
I had to ask you about the ladybirds because we used them last year on the aphids on our roses and they were fantastic.
What do you mean use them? Did you buy them
in? And then we planted them on, put them on a couple of the roses and they moved from one to the other. Oh, look, there's another one over there. We'll go over there. Ooh.
So what have you actively got to keep them in your garden?
Lots of roses.
But that won't work all year round. You've got vegetables as well, haven't you?
Yes, not at the moment. We're between seasons, but normally we have vegetables,
So now's the time to start planting cabbages And if they get infested with aphids, then leave one of those plants and watch. You'll get parasitic wasps. You get hoverfly larva. You get wasps that come in for the hoverfly larva. Oh, you name it. It's just, just do it for a project.
Which vegetables primarily would attract those? Which ones would I need to have?
Zucchini?
No,
I don't think so. And zucchinis are finishing.
Carrots.
But, no, let me tell you about the zucchini. You can get a powdery mildew on that, and there is a ladybird that will eat the mildew. Not as common as your aphid-eating ladybirds, but there are specifics. You said carrots.
Mm-hmm.
When carrots flower, you might get aphids. Certainly plants like your fennel or dill might get them. And I've seen amazing examples. I've got a couple of those plants that are probably 5 years old. And, you know, when they die down, they become wheat-coloured. And you think, oh, that looks a bit daggy. But when I went closer one time, I found a praying mantis there that was that wheat colour. So you get in the head of, you know, why they would want to live there and how they can hide and who else might live there. It's a magical world.
Okay. Capsicum?
Capsicum, yes.
Broccoli?
And you might get chili thrips on capsicum. But then the predators and parasites start to recognise what the pests are and who their food can be. So years ago we had the potato-tomato psyllid. We don't hear about that as much now. So probably some of our local predators have moved in because of them.
23 minutes to nine. Let's keep the subject of insects going and say good morning to Caroline and Dianella. Morning, Caroline.
Good morning.
Hello, Caroline. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Faye. But this grasshopper's giving me a run for my money.
I've told you about the wasp that targets the grasshopper family, haven't I?
I think I've heard you speak about it, but I tried to encourage wasps in my garden. Remember I asked if I could just shift that wasp's nest, but it turned out to be paper wasps, so
right,
I couldn't do it.
All right, get yourself a bag of clay, whether you've got a friend up in the hills where you go and dig up a bucket, or if you go to your local nursery, get some clay. And make stations in the garden. If you wanted, you could make mud bricks and put holes in them, or just dump a pile in the garden. Also, to that, add your water stations and you will get mud nesting wasps.
Good. Is that the only thing that you that deals with them?
No, birds.
Oh, I have a lot of birds, but he's a big boy.
And, He's almost pet status now, isn't he, Caroline?
Oh, he is. Remember you all saw him? He's wandering around decimating this garden. I tried to hose him. He just kept bouncing away.
I know. When they fly off, they look like small birds sometimes.
Yep. He is a pet now.
Well, they won't live forever.
No.
All right. I'll get some clay and let you know what happens.
And put water bowls on the ground because you'll also get lizards. And lizards will be, they're pretty sure they'll eat them as well.
So do I lock the water bottle or do I leave it open so they can get in and have a drink?
Did I say water bottle? I meant water bath, shallow saucer.
Yes, I have those, yeah.
All right, good. Good. Well, it's only a matter of time.
be patient, Caroline. You'll get results.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Okay, let's move along. I have a question for you. We love birds in our garden. We have a little jiggy-jiggy, of course, that possesses the front garden.
Yes.
A couple of ibises, a couple of bin chickens from the park across the road have started to fly in. Are they a danger? Do they have any practical purpose in my garden?
Well, they've become very resourceful, haven't they? I've seen them at open bins at the back of shopping centres. I guess they're opportunistic. Yep. I see them digging in gardens. So they're looking for food, and I don't know if they're specialist harvesters. You'll sometimes see them digging in lawns. Yes. So there's obviously something in the lawn. Probably, they're probably carnivorous.
Yes.
They're
digging around in the vegetable patch, which we've run fallow at the moment between seasons, and they're digging around for something. I wondered if they were after worms or things like that.
Oh, absolutely. Keep watching and you can report back to us on what they're after. But the other thing is, Chris, you could quickly throw in a green manure crop, mustard and whatnot, let it grow and then just turn it back in. It'll value add your patch.
Excellent. The time is 20 minutes to 9. Curtain Radio. 18 minutes to 9. Let's talk gardening. Whenever you're ready, we'll take your calls on 94841927. Faye is here. Ray's away this weekend, which is why I'm in the chair. And Mark Tuchek has joined us in the studio, but we'll get to Mark in a moment. While he gets settled in, I want to give you the chance to win a $75 voucher to Bigger Trees. You know all about Bigger Trees, and you know that this is John's weekly quiz, and he set a very interesting one this morning, which I think you'll like. So remember, 94841927 is the number to call. If you are a member of the Curtain Club, of course, the Curtain family, T's and C's applies. If you've won something in the last 28 days, give somebody else a chance. Here is the question. I'll repeat it twice. One for the oldies. That's what John wrote. One for the oldies. In his movie role of Hans Christian Andersen, Danny Kaye sang a song about an inchworm measuring what type of flower? Okay? In the movie role Hans Christian Andersen, Danny Kaye sang a song about an inchworm measuring what type of flower? Over to you, 94841927. Good morning, Mark.
Hello, Chris. Hello, Faye. How's it going?
Yeah, very good. Lovely to see you, Mark.
All right. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. Now, what have you been up to lately?
Oh,
it's always something new.
Well, I didn't go to the Kalamata Garden Festival. I gave myself a bit of a break from that. But we've been busy at the nursery. The water plants are going gangbusters this time of the year. We're still cleaning up from the storm we had.
Oh, I know.
The storm in the hills that was really quite devastating up at my way.
That was a few weeks ago, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was back in January. Yep. Yeah, and we were without power for 4 days, which made watering a bit tricky. A lot of things got burnt and fried.
Followed by 40 degrees in February on numerous. And how hot was it up there?
Yeah, it's been up to 43 and 44. So, you know, it's been pretty hot in the hills where we are. But getting over that, a few of the plants that have died, we've had to just cry a bit, but we're into propagating still. And it's fantastic growing with it, you know. So it's a good opportunity for people to get out in the garden and actually do some gardening now. It's a great time to plant things in the garden. And there's a fantastic array. All the nurseries, all the wholesalers have been actively growing all through the warm weather. So this time of the year, they've got a really big selection of plants to choose from, and as well as us. And so it's a good opportunity for people to just get out there and plant. Good time.
Well, they certainly need to plan and plant with a new vision, don't they? This last summer's taught us a bit more. So we need to take it on board and not just fall back into that lull where we always do what we've always done. We need to do something different if things didn't work this year.
It's true. It was very testing this year. Mm. A lot of plants got burnt and fried, and up in the hills where we were, you know, the trees are just raining leaves, you know, just because they're so stressed. But if you're observing things in the garden, you can take action accordingly. And there's a lot of plants with burnt leaves at the moment, which look a bit unruly, but, you know, leave them on. You know, if people got burnt leaves in their garden, leave them on because it provides a bit of protection, as you know.
I was going to say, you can get out there now and start cutting back, because I did on Friday.
Well, you know, you're confident that the hot weather's over. Okay. But, yeah, who knows? But it certainly feels like the change is on us, so it's good.
Yeah. But no, I agree. If we know we've got hot weather coming, we don't do that cutback just yet.
Definitely, yeah.
But I had a patch of leather ferns, and I actually brought in a burnt leaf today.
Oh, there it is. Yeah,
to show,
yeah.
Okay, well, I've got all new growth coming, so I do want to give that a chance. And fingers crossed, my garden's too big to just leave it all until the time's right.
Yes,
I have to do a bit.
All the
cross
time.
Cross my fingers.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
We have a winner.
Oh, fantastic.
We had lots of calls, but we have a winner, and her name is Ruth, and she lives in Englewood. She was at she's won the Bigger Trees voucher. She was at the High Tea you were talking about last Thursday.
It was fabulous. Yeah.
Wonderful.
A thoroughly enjoyable event.
There were lots of calls trying to answer the question. In the movie Hans Christian Andersen, Danny Kaye sang a song about an inchworm measuring what type of flower, and I will gently sing it to you. Inchworm, inchworm, measuring the marigolds, you and your arithmetic, you'll probably go far. That's the lyric. I thought I shouldn't sing it, actually. You'd probably all turn away or turn off. Thank you very much for calling, Ruth. Thank you, everyone who did. And we'll send you that voucher really soon from Bigger Trees. Another one coming up in the next hour.
Go on. I wonder if people know what inchworms are. I wonder if John can Google and find out. I mean, I imagine they're a caterpilar that just inches its way up a looper.
Yeah, looper. So I would have thought they're the ones that kind of loop up and then spread out.
Yep.
Is that they make an inch? Don't know.
Well, let's find out more.
They're probably an inch long.
An inch long's like that, Chris. Like
you're thinking metric again.
Yes, probably.
Or when they stretch out, they must be an inch. Yeah, there you go.
But
I did know it was a marigold too. So there we go.
But I would like to offer a challenge to people to have a look in their gardens this week. Look for insect life the target will be an inchworm, which is a caterpillar, just working its way around. See who can find an inchworm in their garden. But while they're doing that, maybe three other insects as well while they're out there.
Good. It is 9 minutes to 9. Curtain Radio. And here we are back in the garden, and the time is 9:10. You picked me up on that one really quickly, Faye. I was trying to read a digital clock. Sometimes you just read it the wrong way around. But it is 9:10, and the right time to get your call in right now if you want to talk to Faye about anything, insects, weeds, you name it, and particularly to Mark Tuchek, who's in the studio with us till 10 o'clock. 94841927, or you can send an email, gardening@curtainfm.com.au.
And Mark did not come in empty-handed today, so we are not disappointed. He's brought a range of tucker bush plants.
Yes.
So,
wow.
Mark, how about telling us what you've got?
Okay. So, let's start with a taste test.
Okay.
Here we go. It's early in the morning.
Listeners will love this.
Have you tried Muntrees before?
No, I have not.
Muntrees.
Okay, here we go. Now, they're just defrosting. And so just grab a few, have a go, and I'll grab the plant in the meantime. So Muntrees is a ground cover plant, and it's probably one of the top 10 bush food plants out of South Australia. It's native to South Australia.
Mm.
It's this one here, and it's a prostrate ground cover to about 2 or so metres wide, and it gets to about 30 centimetres high, and they're starting to grow these commercially now, and because they're a ground cover plant, they're actually trellising them up, a bit like a little grapevine, and they trellis them up. So Muntrees are small fruit, and what do you think they taste like?
It feels a bit like a raisin, like I could imagine it in a cake with maybe cinnamon, apple.
Yes.
And this would give it the dried fruit.
Yeah. How about you, Chris? Yeah.
Initially, I thought that's a bit blueberry, but it's not as sweet as a blueberry.
No.
But it's an interesting because of the taste develops. But I'm not sure where it's going because it's the first time I've tried it. But I'd go into that bag and eat some more.
There you go. So, Muntrees, I kind of describe them as like little spicy apples.
That's it.
And funny you should mention blueberries because, I mean, the sad fact is everybody knows what a blueberry is. But nobody knows what Muntrees are. Well, not many people know what Muntrees are. They've actually got more antioxidants than blueberries.
Wow.
And they've got vitamin C. So they're just a really rich source of nutrients as a bush food plant. Super easy to grow as they'll handle the heat once they get going.
And let's be clear about the name. It's not Muntrees we're talking about here. It's Muntrees, Muntries. If you're going to Tucker Bush to ask for it, it's Muntries.
Very good. And the botanical name is Kunzea pomifera.
Oh, a Kunzea.
Yeah, it belongs to the Kunzea family, so it belongs to the myrtle family. It has little white flowers, are really attractive across the plant. And when they fruit, you can actually smell them. You know, if you've got quite a few plants growing, you can actually smell them, from quite a while away, and they actually attract kangaroos and other things in the garden.
So what height? Because we were talking about living mulches earlier.
Yeah.
So what height does it grow to?
So probably about 30 centimetres high.
Perfect.
2 metres
living
wide.
Mulch. Yeah. Oh, right. I'm going to put that on my list of things to have. And water requirements and soil preparation, Mark?
I'd still improve the soil for them because when you buy them, they're growing in a pot and they're growing in good potting mix. So if you plonk them straight in, if you're on the flat, sandy soils down here, then the roots are just going to hang around where that good soil is. So I do recommend soil conditioning.
So and clay and compost added to sand.
Yeah, organic matter, all that kind of thing, still beneficial for them. And you want to mix it 50-50 with your existing soil. So the idea is that the roots transition from the good potting mix down into the soil 50-50 and then out into the poorer soil that way.
Yep. Okay. And so if we plant them now, what sort of watering regime and are they drought tolerant? Can they survive without water in a couple of years?
Well, theoretically, yes.
Okay.
But if they are producing fruit, you want to make sure they still get a little bit of water then, because that affects the fruit development.
For best results.
Yeah, and if you still plant them, yes, still water them, because their roots are just confined to that little pot. Mm. And so a good watering twice a week, bucket full of water, will get them on their way. And great time to plant now. So the earth is still warm. Supposedly we'll get a few more rains, more than what we got.
Mm.
And, yeah, great to plant.
It's a lovely foliage plant. Like, it's tight. It looks like thyme, like a creeping thyme, but more robust.
Yeah, very small foliage and just very hardy. They're good in coastal areas and things like that. So it's
good,
a really good food, bush food plant.
All right, we'll give that one a big tick. I like that.
I like the idea, because the City of Coburn encouraged me to change my nature strip out the front of the house to Australian, which we put a lot into. But you want to put in interesting things that, as you say, provide something that we can also enjoy and eat, because everything else is just growing. Bushes are going and the ground cover's going crazy.
Yeah.
But something like that would be a very interesting feature.
Yeah, it's fine on the verge, and we've got quite a few plants in the range that suit that environment, because there's usually requirements about height restrictions and things like that. But there's another one we've got at the moment, which is a Myoporum. It's called Myoporum insular prostrate. So it's a prostrate version, and its common name is Bubiella.
Yes.
And has little white flowers and a little blue fruit, which is a little bit on the bitter side. But if you're into gin, they're experimenting with using the fruit from this plant as a juniper substitute. And, well, they're not sure if they can call it a gin if it doesn't have juniper berries in it.
Mm-hmm.
But this Myoporum is being experimented, and there's a few gins out there being produced with Myoporum berries.
Just before we go any further, the mun trees, you said the flavour, because some of the listeners may be wondering, and I think it's important because it's edible, a bit like, did you say crab apple?
No, I said it's a bit like a spicy apple. Oh. It's got like an apple with a bit of spice to it. So, yeah, as you said, Faye, great in a apple pie.
Oh, yes.
Any kind of dessert. I've actually heard of people that actually just fry them up with a bit of butter and put them on a steak too. So there you go.
But if I got a bottle of gin, could I put that in and it would impregnate it perhaps with a little light flavour?
Well,
try it, Chris.
Yes,
thank you.
Well, vodka even.
Yes, indeed.
Vodka takes on the
Thank you for that permission. Flavor. I will try that, Faye.
Yeah. Have a go.
It's now just 2 minutes to the news with Liam O'Connell at 9 o'clock. Where are we going next?
Well, what have we got up next?
Oh, we've got some more plants here. Let's go with this one, which you probably know.
Very pretty.
Yeah. Isn't that?
So this is Rosella, and we call this an introduced Australian. So we're not quite sure when it came into Australia through ancient Indonesian fishermen through the top end, but it's been here long enough to find that the Australian Rosella has actually developed a bit differently from African or it's from originally from Sri Lanka. So Rosella is really an annual down here in Perth, because it gets too cold for us in winter. Up north, it's perennial, so it just keeps growing. And Rosella grows to about 2 metres, and the leaves are edible, so we actually sell the leaves as edible part of the sort of plant. But of course, everyone knows the fruit of the Rosella, which is a calyx. And it's quite interesting, because the Rosella buds come out, and they look very similar. So the buds come out, but they're more pointed, and then, you get a pale cream or pinkish flower with a dark centre, and then they start to form these Rosella calyxes, if you like. And they do have a few seeds in them. They don't ripen, so you do need to trim them off, but they're just kind of stuck up the stem, and they look really attractive too in the garden. So.
Well, they look really attractive in the, is it rose hip syrup?
Yes.
Where they're often put into the bottom of a champagne glass.
Mm. All right, sticking to very the alcohol thing.
Yes, very decadent.
I'll just remind you, it's only 9 o'clock in the morning.
I don't drink before 5, Mark.
I do? Okay.
Yeah, I'll just remind you.
Yeah, so very popular in champagne, okay. And it's a great plant.
Let's continue talking about how to impregnate our alcohol, but mostly about bush tucker with Mark Tuchek, who is here in the studio with us until 10 o'clock. Peter from Redcliffe, we will ask, or you will ask Mark a question right after the news, which is where we're going now, because it's 9 o'clock. Yes, a sunny day today and tomorrow, but today those winds will continue from the southeast at 20 to 30 kilometres per hour, tending southeast to southwesterly, 25 to 40 in the early afternoon, and then becoming southeasterly again, 20 to 30 in the evening. Currently they are east-southeasterly at 11 kilometres per hour. The UV index today, gardeners, is at 10, which is very high, from 10 to 9, so that's active now until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Current temperature in Perth is 18 degrees. We expect it to rise just 9 more degrees to 27, which will just make it an even more perfect day. But I hope you'll remember to wear a hat when you're out and about gardening. Faye.
John has brought us in some information about the loopers, and there's quite a range of plants that they can be found on. There is an apple looper, which affects apples, sunflowers, clematis and wattles. There are twig loopers, roses, geraniums, gardenias and weeds, plus more, soybean loopers, green loopers and tobacco loopers.
Tobacco.
And they don't just move an inch. They can come in all
shapes
sizes
and sizes.
And colours, green and brown. So look out. That's your target species for the week. People, go out and see if you can find a looper or an inchworm mm-hmm. in the garden on your plants. And I've given you a range of plants they might be found on.
And if you've got marigolds, well, that's the first place to start. Now, we have a question here from Mary in Banjup. Where can she find mung trees? And are these plants toxic for animals?
Okay, so mung trees, the plants, are available in your local garden centre. You might have to ask for them. So they're big box stores, your local independent garden centre, you can request tucker bush mung trees. But if you're wanting the actual fruit themselves, that's a little bit trickier, because we are just growing the fruit to supply restaurants at the moment. And the hope is we'll do some farmers markets down the track. We haven't committed to any farmers markets at the moment, but we're just trying to introduce fresh and dried botanicals to the pantry that way as well. Besides,
so what restaurants would you maybe find them on the menu?
You can go to Wildflower in the city. It's a great restaurant in the Como Treasury. There's the Ritz-Carlton, there's Hearth.
Oh, I go there every day.
Hearth in the Ritz-Carlton.
Mm.
And you don't have to, it does have to be a birthday, you can just go there all the time. At Mandoon Estate, there's a restaurant called Wild Swan in Mandoon Estate, just to name a few, so there we go.
But are they toxic to animals?
No.
Okay, let's go to Redcliffe. Peter, you've been very patient. Thank you so much. Mark's listening. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I've got a bush mint plant I bought from you quite some time ago. It went to flower. It got really badly sunburnt, and now it's got all little seeds. Can I save those seeds, or
you can?
Do I cut it back, or what do I do with it?
So the seeds will be tiny. So it had little white flowers in your bush mint. Yeah.
It's sort of like a pinkish tone to them, but it's all sort of, and then when the hot weather came, it all died back, if you like. Still got plenty of greenish on it, but the flowers are all dead and withered. I cut it all back, or do I just let it go for a while?
Oh, you can cut it back, and they do spring back to life quite easily, because we give our mints a haircut. Now, there's in the Tuckerbush range, there's a bush mint which has little white flowers. There's wild mint, which has like a purpley mauve flower, and there's also
this one's got a label saying Mentha saturioides.
Saturoides, yep, that is definitely the bush mint. So that's like a savoury mint. It's very good with lamb, but what you can do is just grab it by the scruff of the neck and just put the scissors through, and just keep it warm. Is it in a pot or in the ground?
It's in my boggy area around the pond.
Okay, excellent. and then just give it a little bit of fertilizer, and they do spring back to life very easily after a haircut.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are those seeds that I'm actually finding, like I've got a, there's a, I put a paper bag over it and shook it, and it's sort of like, looks like sawdust.
Yes, they'd be very, very fine, very tiny, and they would be seeds. So we just propagate ours by division, because they split very easily. You can take little kind of rhizomes, runners off the side, and if you want to propagate them that way, it's a lot easier than the seed because it's so fine. Yeah. But yeah, you can keep the seed, yes.
I just didn't want to lose the whole plant. I wanted to, if I could save it, I would, you know, but yeah, so.
Well, you'll find that there'll be, under the ground, there'll be like little white rhizomes, and you can just dig them off and transplant them to a different area. And that'll be fine. Come good. Yep.
And also, just mentioning Marissa from Bindi Bindi, quite sad to hear about her demise, if you like.
Oh, it's incredibly sad.
We're
going to talk about that. Yeah, we'll talk about that a bit later. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks for your help, Mark. I really appreciate your advice.
Thanks, Peter.
That's Peter in Redcliffe talking to Mark Tuckabush Tuchek, who's in the studio with us until 10. If you've got questions, whether it's about bush tucker, whether it's about insects, weeds, whatever it may be that's on your mind, don't hold back. 94841927 is the number to ring now, or send your emails to gardening@curtainfm.com.au. It's 11 minutes past 9, Faye.
Yes, let's carry on with the lovely range of plants that Mark's brought in. Now, can I have, a request. Can we do the cinnamon myrtle, please?
Cinnamon myrtle, yes.
I love the sound of it, and I know it's got some other benefits.
Okay, so you need to do a bit of a scratch and smell, which is always handy for radio. And there we go. There we go, Chris. There's a few leaves. So you just have to crush the leaves and smell them. So cinnamon myrtle belongs to, well, the Syzygium or Backhausia family.
Lily pilly
family. And same as the lemon myrtle. And we've got quite a few myrtles that impart really strong flavours. And you can use cinnamon myrtle anywhere you'd use cinnamon as a substitute. So
you can eat the leaf?
Oh, you can eat the leaf if you've had coffee, maybe.
I've had a coffee.
Yeah. And the flowers are edible too. So they have little white fluffy flowers, and they're followed by these little bracts and things like that. So you can cook them up. And it's got a good oil content, so it's got essential oils in it, cinnamon myrtle. It's a shrub that grows to over here. Of course, it's an Eastern States native. It's not native to WA. It grows about 4 metres over here. It needs a bit of protection from our hot winds and our hot afternoon summer sun. And we just grow it under a little bit of shade cloth this time of year. Every other time of the year, it takes full sun. And it's a really attractive plant when it's in flower too. So
it's very glossy. Now, I believe this is a butterfly-attracting plant as well. Is that right, Mark?
It certainly is. And it's a magnet for all pollinators, actually. There's a whole range of things that go for this. And the lemon myrtle as well. So lemon myrtle flower and cinnamon myrtle flower are really attractive to pollinators and butterflies. So
now, being that it grows to 4 metres but wants some protection, I'm thinking about aspects in my garden, and I imagine that this would pair very well as the understory of large gum trees.
Yes. Yeah.
So they'll get the dappled light, but it's got a glossy green foliage.
Yes. The foliage is really attractive. It's got kind of light and new green growth, and then the leaves get darker with age. And it's a bit sparse like this, but we're starting to trim our bigger plants, and you get quite a neat plant out of it.
Yeah, I could imagine that it would respond well to pruning.
Yeah. So cinnamon myrtle, it's not easy to find. You know, we have them around occasionally, but, yeah, it's one of those rarer, harder to get hold of tuckerbush plants.
And being that it can grow to 4 metres, I imagine it's reasonably fast growing.
Oh, no, it's not. No, no, a bit on the slower side. We find, because we containerise all of ours, and we just find them a little bit slower. Than lemon myrtle's probably a bit quicker than cinnamon myrtle.
Okay.
Mm.
Oh, it's lovely. It looks like a lovely plant.
Yep.
It's on my list now.
Interesting scent.
It's very strong in flavour.
Yes, And so you just use it anywhere. You'd use regular introduced exotic cinnamon. So, and just going back to the, you know, the pollinators and things like that, wearing my other hat, which is growing water plants, and I grow a big range of water plants up there, including water lilies and pond plants. It's actually been shown that if you've got water in the garden and either a pond or a water feature, having water in the garden attracts a myriad of pollinators and also beneficial insects that control bad insects. So it's one of those, you know, they have the gardening trends that come out every year for what's trending for this year. They found that, the insect-friendly plants are really trending at the moment. So that was a trend they predicted for this year. But water gardening hasn't really gone away since COVID times, because having water in the garden is very relaxing for yourself. And there's two things that are really quite relaxing to watch, is like an open fire, you know, when you watch the flames. And also if you watch water, running water or fish in water, that also slows you down and makes you mindful and things like that. So I encourage everyone to have some kind of water garden or water feature in their garden, and because it provides so many benefits to yourself, the local fauna and flora, and a myriad of other things too. So water gardening is the way to go.
Even if you've got a balcony, you can create a very large pot without a hole in the bottom.
Yeah.
Fill it up with water. You can grow, a number of water plants, some edible if you wanted to.
Yes, there's a huge range of edible water plants.
And there's a lot of tough ones, like even your old-fashioned canna, pot that up and put that into a body of water. Now, I've got old man's beard hanging around the patio on pieces of paper bark, branches of paper bark with bromeliads off it. And I only give them a splash every couple of days. But because there's a body of water underneath it, it creates humidity. So with our 40-degree days in summer, plants helping other plants helping insects, birds, etc. So the birds will come in to the patio. They'll collect something out of a spider web. They'll sit on the branch. They'll go down and have a drink. You know, there's just a whole world of life.
Yes.
I mean, it is very meditative.
It is.
To sit out there or to be hand watering.
Yeah. And you're right. Like, if you don't have a big area, you can have a water garden in a small bowl, because we actually do grow a couple of miniature water lilies that don't grow as big. Their flowers aren't as big. You know, they're like a miniature in all respects. But, if you just want something in a bowl, on the balcony or a patio area, they need a bit of sun. So
how much sun for them to flower?
Well, really, probably at least 2/3 of a day. So mostly full sun. If they get a bit of shade in the afternoon, that's fine. But full sun for those.
And what depth does it need to be? What's the minimum?
The minimum depth would probably be about 30 to 40 centimetres.
Okay,
so if you look for a bowl about that deep, then you're off to the markets.
And just remember, if you are putting it on a balcony, be mindful of the weight, because for every litre of water, it is 1 kilo.
True, that's right.
So a 100-litre bowl, which is like the equivalent of 10 buckets, would be, how many is that?
10 litres, yeah, I know. There you go. A bucket is, about 9 or 10 litres. Yeah. So that's,
9 or 10
kilos. That's 10 kilos. So that's 10 correct. Buckets is
a lot, 100 kilos.
100 kilos.
Which is
The weight of a person.
Right, me. Okay. Yeah.
Side topic. On your Facebook page yesterday, you were talking about drunkard something?
Drunkard's dream.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's that?
Well, it's related to one of the Ripsalis. And so it was about 5 years ago we started featuring different plants. And one of the plants that I brought in I thought was a Ripsalis, because, you know, you get these plants, friends give them to you. Yeah. And my drunkard's dream was like, oh, gosh, I've had it well over 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And so, I don't always know what the name is.
No.
But yes, Drunkard's Dream, it's a succulent related to Ripsalis, and it has flowers that look like little beer bottles.
That's
it.
I was going to say, why the name?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Let's take a break. It's coming up 20 minutes past 9. We're taking your calls. We're ready when you are. 9484 1927. Curtain Radio in Perth. 22 minutes past 9. We're back. We're getting calls too, I'm very glad to say, at this particular hour. Did you want to talk about something first before we talk to Karen?
Oh, no. Let's go straight to Karen.
Here you are, Karen. It's your moment to talk about trimming plants. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering, I have got a few of these Duranta ripens, the geisha girls. One is in the front, which looks beautiful, flowering. It has got some shade. The one in the back next to the pool is totally burnt. Can I cut that back now? Hard?
I probably would, Karen. Mark said just wait a bit, but they're a big job, and if it is a big plant, maybe if you can team it up with your verg collection time. But the Durantas respond extraordinarily well to pruning. The time we wouldn't do things would be winter and, summer. But we've got a cool week coming, and they're such a tough plant. I do not think you would have a problem.
Yeah, I agree. They're very tough, so you won't have any trouble trimming it any time.
And what about the gel wax? Is that should I wait with that a bit? It's not that burnt that much, but the top's all burnt.
Geraldton wax. Gee, that's strange that a Geraldton wax would burn. I would have thought they would be fine.
I mean, it is getting yellowish. Yellowish tips, it's getting it had already for a while. The tips look dry. The rest of the bush is not too bad, but I was just wondering whether I could,
A deficiency if it's actually showing yellow tips or things like that on it.
Well, I know that Karen has a lot in her garden, so I think that it might be getting to the point where there's root girdling. I would be careful with your Geraldton wax, because if it's been let go a long time, it will struggle a bit more with being cut back. The best time to cut back your Geraldton wax is after it finishes flowering. It will flower in winter, so you could take the tips off it, and that will encourage some more growth, and you could do that now. But don't give it a hard prune.
Okay, great. Okay, and I just want to mention, you wouldn't believe it, one of my apple trees is flowering. I couldn't believe it. I just noticed some flowers on it, but it still carries the apples, and the apples are not even ripe yet, the pink lady.
Right. Okay. Strange. Yeah, no, I think plants are triggered. I don't think they're confused at all, Chris.
No.
I think that they respond to daylight hours and temperature.
Okay.
So,
that's what I've never noticed that there would. Yeah, not many, but a few of them. Very strange.
Yeah, well, autumn is like another spring. The thing is, though, what I was going to say is now is probably a good time to be summer pruning deciduous plants. And then you could do it again. In winter, you could prune your deciduous plants again when you can see the framework. But any pruning you do in winter will create more growth.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you so much. And very much enjoy your show. Thank you both.
Thanks,
of you.
Karen.
Thank you, all of you. Thank you, Karen.
Schönes Wochenende, as you would say. But here we are on Let's Talk Gardening on Curtain FM, ready for your calls, because Mark Tuchek is in the studio, but Faye is here, as always, to talk to you about the things you want to know that are going on in your garden. 9484 1927.
And we have the very special Mark Tuchek from Tucker Bush with us, so we are going to partake of his excellent knowledge and learn about the feature plants that he has brought in for us today.
Okay. All right. So this one here it's called a dwarf plum pine. And so this Podocarpus is actually, again, from the Eastern States. Now, Western Australia has its own Podocarpus called Druiensis. And for people not familiar, the most common one around the traps is Podocarpus alatus, or the Illawarra plum pine or brown pine. And That is a very hardy small tree, and in the past it's been used as street trees because of its hardiness. But this particular one that we've got here is a dwarf form, so this only gets to about, you know, 2 to 3 meters or so, and it's got a bit of a weeping habit. It's very fine foliage, but it produces a little blue to purple droop with attached to a hard seed, and you quickly figure out which one's the droop and which one's the hard seed. And the fruit will turn your tongue black like a mulberry will, and they're very a lot of these plants that have this dark fruit are very high in antioxidants, and also the red fruits are high in anthocyanin, and these are very good for you. They've got a fruit, it's very soft, it's a bit the taste is a bit, it's kind of sweet with a bit of a savoury aftertaste. It's almost like a piney aftertaste.
Mm.
And I'm not a cook at all, but I've actually had the fruit, I baked the fruit into some muffins and substituted out the blueberries, and I've actually put, well, the Illawarra plum pine fruit, which is the same as this, into blueberries. I mean, into muffins, sorry.
Expanding your repertoire.
I know. There you go. And so I'm quite good at growing things, but I'm terrible at cooking. So so this one's not very common, and that we'd actually been trying. This is a few of our original trial plants, but you can get smaller plants out in the garden centres soon. And look out for this. Now, we do recommend that you plant more than one of these because they are dioecious. And it's hard to tell when they're young like this what sex they are.
Mm.
So unfortunately you can't just...
So you don't know if that's male or female?
No. Unfortunately you just can't lift up a leaf and look underneath.
But how would you know?
No, that's it. Well,
when it flowers.
When it finally flowers, okay. When it reaches sexual maturity.
When it reaches sexual maturity, Chris.
There you go. And... So recommend planting more than one or a few, and you can even make a hedge out of them.
Mm.
And then that way you can guarantee pollination of these. But
just hope not all of them flower.
It looks quite like a bottle brush, quite a fine leaf.
This one's quite fine, yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
The Illawarra plum has slightly thicker leaves but similar shape, and it's more upright, and this one's... more weeping habit to it. So,
okay.
There you go.
29 minutes past nine. Jim from Heathridge is next on the program. Morning, Jim.
Good morning, all. How are you?
Really good. Thanks, Jim. How can we help you today?
Oh, you can probably lend me $350. I had to pay the plumber yesterday for clearing out my sewer.
Ouch. Oh, I think that's money well spent.
Well, for the time being, but he seems to think it's going to be an ongoing problem. And,
okay.
I'm hoping that somebody might be able to give me a bit of an idea of what I can do, because I'm an amateur gardener, but my garden's looking pretty good, and I really don't want to get rid of anything. So is there anything that I could use periodically, shall we say, to put down the sewer to keep those roots away? Because the sewer is out of urban ware, you know, the old-style sort of sewers we used to have.
So is it, like, when you say sewer, are we talking about pipe work, or are we talking about the big soak well?
No, the pipe work. So it would be the sewer line that goes from the toilets down to the front, where the main pit is. So it's that line.
Okay, all right. And so what happened yesterday?
The gentleman just came in with the machine, like a snake sort of thing. It had a cutter at the front of it, and he basically put it down the sewer line, and it sort of spins. My
yes.
thought would be in it, and it actually cut the roots out. They were quite a way down. He reckons they were about 36 metres down the line. He said he won't be able to do it again if it ever happened again, because it's just too difficult. So he said, look, you're going to have to replace the whole thing. And it's like, yeah, or okay.
Right.
Well, sorry, I can't do that.
Well, so, let me tell you, I've had a little bit of experience with this sort of thing, in that we have to manage our own drains, and we recently had a problem, and we've got big trees. So I know the process about working out where the problem is. So I think you're lucky in that he said it's about 36 metres down. So that tells you, if you know the line of your pipe, maybe one of the things you could do is dig down in that area and locate your pipe, free it up from the outside, because it's really a time bomb before it happens again. So imagine you've got a crack in there and there's a root going in. Once you identify that section of pipe, you can manage it. So there are fabrics like geotextile fabrics, which can act as a root barrier. So you dig away the roots and you can fix that area. And hopefully maybe it's not going to happen further down, but that will get that area identified and fixed up. Does that help a bit?
Yes, it does. It's something that he suggested. I was thinking more of a something that you could put down the sewer line as in a chemical or something that not necessarily kill the tree, but kill the roots about.
I think you need to identify if there is a tiny crack in that pipe where the root is getting in, because the roots, if the root's in there, it's getting in somehow. That's what you have to fix. And I don't think there's an easy way other than dig.
Yeah. They used to be like copper-based products to put down the drain, but they're poisonous and they don't last long and you'll just get them back again. Yep. So, yeah, I think Faye's suggestion. And if they put if you put blue metal around the pipes too and then that geofabric as well, if the roots get in there, they're kind of air-pruned, so they're not in the soil. But it's going to be a big job.
Okay. Very good. May I ask another question, please?
Yep, quickly.
I have a mango tree that I look after so well. every year I look after it really, really well, but I've had it for about 4 years now and it hasn't grown any more than about a metre and a half. Every year it sprouts and then it sort of like dies off as such. It doesn't seem to want to get any taller. I put mulch around, I put organic material around, I water it every other day, if not every day. This year I've put some shade cloth around it, thinking that it might be the hot seasons we're having. But I can't seem to get it, you know, really growing.
Well, being in Heathridge, you probably have to counter the sandy soil. And if its roots have got out into the sandy soil, it might be struggling. It sounds like you've given it a lot of what it needs. You know, clay and compost on the top, a layer of mulch, wetting agent, slow-release fertilizer, and give it a little cut back, because if you want something to grow, you cut it back, it will branch out and put on some new growth. But also double-check in case it's got one of the fungal diseases, and that could be a problem. So then we'd have to look at your leaf to see what deficiency or disease it is. Okay? There you go, Jim.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate your call. That's good. Let's move out to Gidgee up now, because Bill has a question for you, Mark. Morning, Bill.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for the program. Mark, some advice on Davidson plums. I've got a couple in pots, quite large tubs, and they were doing beautifully. Christmas Day, they just got cooked. Something terrible, and still alive, but barely. There's some new shoots coming through, but just as a comparison, I had a Fraser Island apple, another Tucker bush, which is still looking beautiful. I know it's totally different foliage, etc., different types of plants. But any advice on the Davidson plums? I'd protect them from winds.
Yes.
They were looking fantastic. They were looking the best they'd ever looked, and only about a metre high, a couple of years old in tubs.
Yes, okay. Well, is there obviously still a bit of green left in the stem?
Yeah, there's new shoots coming through.
Okay.
New shoots coming through, yeah.
Well, that's a good sign. Maybe the only thing you could do would be to repot it, so you could actually take it out, remove the potting mix in the bottom of that pot, put some fresh potting mix in, and then replant it back into the same pot. So you can do that if you want to keep it in the same size pot. But they should recover. If it's got new shoots, it obviously got stressed at some point, but the new shoots are a good sign of recovery. And the Fraser Island apple is a crunchier. It's a different plant. It belongs to the same family as lemon aspen. And they're wonderful trees, very hardy. And in fact, in Queensland, they're using them as street trees. But that's a really nice plant. But you've done well with both of them.
There was a Davidson plum. Where I first saw one, there was down at the Men of the Trees in Hazelmere when Bolt Coffee used to operate. They just had one in a 44-gallon drum, and it was a couple of metres high, and it was loaded in fruit and everything. And ever since I don't know how many I've lost since I first saw that one. But they grow okay in Perth, the Davidson plums.
Yeah, definitely. We've got them in big 70-litre pots, and they fruit, and ours are about 3 to 4 metres high. And they get battered around with the wind, but they fruit easily. So, yeah, I'd just suggest repotting yours into some fresh potting mix and it should be good.
Okay, thanks very much. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Bill. Bill in Gidgegana. We're going to Bill in Belden now. Bill, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Hello, Bill.
Hi, thank you for taking the call.
You're welcome.
My problem is we're back to tree roots or surface roots. Well, I'm in Belden, but I'm overgrowing for a start. What my problem that I'm experiencing is I'm not getting growth. When I dig down into the soil, I find that I've got surface roots. They're very, very matted, white in colour, some pale yellow, and they've gone to the base of the plant. So they're taking all the nutrients out of the soil. So what I'm really doing is feeding weeds and not getting any growth. Now, what I'm concerned about, I have asked this question previously, when I take and I clean all the roots away, do they re-strike?
I missed what is coming up and taking all the nutrients. Weeds, did you say?
No, they're not weeds, they're roots. They're like surface roots, they're like matting. I've got roots, I don't know what they're from, they could be from trees or from anything, but they're very fine.
Okay.
They're like a mesh.
Yes, yep.
So basically what happens when you put the water mulch or fertilizer on, it's feeding these roots, not the actual plant. The plant is matted underneath with these fine mesh-style roots.
Okay. What plants have we got in the vicinity that we're...
Everything. Roses. Yep. Roses are the ones that are the worst affected.
Yeah.
What I'm currently doing is digging up, taking all the surface roots or whatever's gone underneath the rose that's taking all the nutrients, taking all that matting away, putting it in the bin, and then reworking the soil.
All right, yeah. It sounds like there's a few decisions to be made here, Bill. It probably might be helpful if you had someone on site looking at what you've got. If you have a garden that is overgrown, you know, it might have been planted 30 or 40 years ago, lots of things were put in, what worked, survived, and now we've got to a point where it's overgrown, you've got root girdling. Someone who is qualified would understand where those roots are coming from. Mm-hmm. Maybe your yard, in which case you can deal with it. If it's a neighbour's yard, that'll be a different story.
Yeah.
But you may have to plan ahead, and, you know, some of these problems we have make us realise that we have to make decisions for the future. So I start to look at what I want for my next 10 or 20 years, and if it's a large tree that's causing me grief, do I still want to be stressing about it for the next 10 years, or do I want to move on? So if you send us some photos, that could help. Otherwise, I'd recommend getting someone out to have a look at the big picture.
But do these roots, like all the matting, do they re-strike if they're still in the soil when they've been cut up?
It will depend on what it is. So avocados have very matted surface roots, but some other trees will re-sprout when they're cut. So,
gotcha, yeah.
Having someone who can identify all those things will be a help.
I mean, it seems to be obviously coming up through, down about 5 or 6 feet. They actually creeping back up again and again and again. Yeah. But, I'll try that. Thank you for your assistance.
You're welcome, Bill. Good luck with that, and please let us know how you get on.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye.
Thank you, Bill. We do have a call from Leslie, which we're going to come back to in just a moment because it is 18 minutes to 10. Curtain Radio. 16 minutes to 10. It's time for you, good listener, to give yourself the chance perhaps to win a $75 voucher from the Green Life Soil Company. I've dealt with them. They're good people, and I think you'd really appreciate a $75 voucher from them. But, of course, it means you have to answer a question. And that question is as simple as this. If you're Irish, it'll probably help. People believe four-leaf clovers are lucky because they're rare. Now, the question is, true or false? That's what you have to tell Bev. For each four-leaf clover, there are 500 three-leaf clovers. True or false? The question is, for each four-leaf clover, there are 500 three-leaf clovers. True or false? Now, you know the number, 94841927. T's and C's apply. If you're, of course, a Curtain Club member, you're very welcome. And we look forward to your calls. Meanwhile, back to Mark and Faye in the studio here. And we're going to take a call now from Leslie in Stirling. So good morning to you, Leslie.
Good morning, Mark and Faye. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm sounding a bit croaky because I'm just getting over our first dose of COVID. Oh, so bear with me a bit.
Okay.
I have a problem with my frangipanis on the verge. We transplanted 2 years ago frangipanis that were out of control. They were growing so big within the garden, with huge leaves, big trunks, taking over. You had to walk past walkways. We waited till the right time of year, and then we transplanted them directly in front of them, but on the verge. Well, now they're surviving. And they've grown taller, and they've got the skinniest leaves you've ever seen. The skinny little leaves, and the trunks aren't really strong and healthy looking. And I'm just wondering what I should do. Should I cut them back by 40% or something to see if that will help, or what do you suggest?
Well, they all do have different growth habits, Leslie, and there's one in the photo here that has grown quite tall, and... Yep. I would say if you wanted to prune that, you do some judicious pruning halfway down a stem, and that will encourage it to bush out. So you select which branches you want to remove.
Yep.
And the ones you would remove are where you want more growth. Does that make sense? Because they will branch. But don't cut flush at the stem. Cut halfway down a branch. Because it will heal over and reshoot.
Right. Excellent.
Okay.
Excellent. And they're both those, the ones that are struggling pretty much, both of them are red. They're a red frangipani, and they're beautiful in within the garden, but outside there. I still have flowers on both of them, but I haven't had much less growth.
No, and they don't look like the happiest plants. Red is a degree of difficulty. It has a higher degree of difficulty. Maybe take a couple of cuttings, get them growing in pots, and then have another go. I think soil preparation and water is probably a big factor here. They're just not happy. They need a bit more love.
Yeah, I agree. Have you used a wetting agent, Leslie, on those really spindly ones?
Yes, we've been doing that. It is, where I live is on land, filled in land, beautiful area in the Princeton Estate in Stirling,
a beautiful area, but the soil underneath the soil isn't natural. It isn't natural ground. It's limestone and rubbish.
Yes. Yep.
And they've taken all the good stuff out because it was, you know, we're behind Waldeck and in Carinup Road.
Yes.
So, you know, it's just very frustrating from a verge perspective because we took out a lawn that we had to pour so much water in when we moved in that I said, no, we can't do that. We couldn't keep it up. So we replaced it with gardens and wood chips.
Well, don't give up. You could certainly put another really deep layer of wood chips through there because that does help. That will break down and improve the soil underneath. I would consider putting in more plants, really, really tough plants that grow and cover the ground because you've probably got a very hot, dry area there with
awful.
The brick wall. Yeah.
Awful.
So don't give up.
There's
put
so
in
much reflective heat from everywhere.
Deeper mulch and a few more hardy plants to cover that ground and buffer the heat.
Fantastic.
All right.
And one more quick question. My daughter has a Satsuma plum tree in her backyard. It's about 5 or 6 years old probably now. And it grows profusely. It looks fabulous. But last year they had 2 plums and I think this year they've had 1.
All right. Give it a cut back now.
Cut it back now.
Yep.
I'll tell them that.
Okay.
They're not good at that, but I will tell them to do it again.
Okay.
Lovely. Thank you for your help.
All right. Bye.
I have my microphone turned off that time. Thank you, Leslie. Should we wait to talk to Dee after the break?
Oh, let's make it quick.
Okay. We'll make it right now. Here you are, Dee. Good morning to you out there in Clarkson.
Good morning. I have a golden cane palm planted really close to the house, like about half a metre away from the house, and it's big. And I'm concerned about it. What do I need to do?
Probably take action sooner rather than later. They can be moved. They can... is it sort of pushing against the house?
Not yet, but it will.
Okay. So, yeah, I think you know what you need to do, Dee.
Yeah, because
I do know, actually.
Well, we give you permission to do it.
Because they're a clumping palm, so they just start to spread out.
Yeah.
And you can remove the canes at the base, but that doesn't control the actual fibrous roots at the base. So
it might be worth something. You may find a landscaper who has got a space for it and they can come and dig. If you're lucky, they'll take it away for nothing and they'll sell it off as an advanced plant.
Yes.
Well, it's definitely advanced. It's away. It's up to the top of the roof, actually, and it's beside the area of the house. It's beside is a bathroom.
Okay. All right. Off you go.
Need to go. Okay.
All right. Permission granted.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you, Dee. Look at the time. It's it's 9:10. We still don't have a winner for our Green Life Soil $75 voucher, and it's very, very simple. It's either yes or it's no. It's either true or it's either false. Each four-leaf clover has 500. Oh, sorry, for every 1 four-leaf clover, there are 500 three-leaf clovers. True or false? All calls so far have been wrong. This is your chance while we play the next commercial break to get in on 9484-1927 and you could win a $75 gift voucher.
Curtain Radio.
At 9:56, we do have a winner for our Green Life Soil $75 voucher. The question we asked you was true or false. For each four-leaf clover, there are 500 leaf clovers, 500 three-leaf clovers, rather. Was it false or was it true? It was false. And Gay and Woolerton was the first to come up with that answer. Just as a bit of background, three-leaf clovers outnumber four-leaf clovers 5,000 to 1. And they outnumber five-leaf clovers by 100,000 to 1. And as Mark asked me just now, how do they know that? I don't know.
Somebody's got a lot of time in their hands to just count them all.
A PhD in four-leaf clovers?
Yes.
So, Mark, you've provided a lot of education on bush tucker plants over the years, and we've enjoyed watching all the stories as you've taken trips on the road round to schools and around the state. And, of course, you've done a lot of that sharing with the very knowledgeable Marissa Verma over the years. Yes. Lots of great memories, yep, and fun times. And we heard this week some very sad news about Marissa. She's been going through a struggle for quite a long time that none of us could have imagined. No. Would you be able to share with the listeners the struggles that Marissa is going through?
Yeah, so to give you a bit of background, when I started my bush food journey back in 2015, I went to Marissa. Marissa was doing a cultural tour out of Piney Lakes, and so that's where I met Marissa. And of course, I was being asked to go into schools to do a bush food garden, and Marissa was already going into schools to talk about Aboriginal culture, and she would recommend me and I would recommend her. And of course, I said, well, one day let's just team up together and do something together. And so I think this was back in 2017 now. So we said we put one post on Facebook and say, listen, we want to come out to a school together to do this. And, of course, yeah, we just wanted one guinea pig school, and then straight away we got 60 schools. And, and so that was the start of our Tuckabush Schools program. And you know, we spent a lot of time, you know, going to schools. In fact, now I think the number's up to 150. But, of course, as you mentioned, Marissa got very sick in June last year. And so she's, of course, she's her business, Bindi Bindi Dreaming, does other things as well, a lot of cultural sessions and bush food tours. And, of course, she couldn't do any of this when she was sick. And we didn't realise, you know, how sick Marissa got. But, you know, she ended up at one point nearly dying, had a heart attack, and got sepsis, where unfortunately the decision was made. Marissa had to have her arms amputated off just below the wrist. So she's actually lost her arms, and she's been bedridden this whole time. And I went to visit her before Christmas, and you know, she's having to learn to walk again. And you know, it's just a huge, you know, thing to deal with, especially for herself and her family and immediate friends. And, of course, her livelihood as well has been affected. And she was the primary caregiver for her mum and her husband. And, of course, now that's reversed because they're the primary caregivers for Marissa. And, you know, Marissa has...
She's been instrumental in sharing the love. Anyone who's met Marissa would be hard-pressed not to see not only the smile on her face, but what comes from within. And one of the photos that was shared on Facebook this week was her in a wheelchair. And that smile still comes through. So she's got the battle of her life for her life. And her family, emotional and financial. And her husband has set up a Facebook, he's done a Facebook post, and he's also set up a GoFundMe.
Yeah.
So that information is on the Tuckabush page. We were just devastated to hear the story this week, and perhaps by sharing Marissa's story, the public can show their support and know that she's and they are not on their own.
Yeah, because in the past, you know, Marissa was so giving and so helpful for, you know, so many people, but now she needs their help.
Bindi Bindi Dreaming was started to share the knowledge, and she's been an amazing bridge between cultures, sharing the information.
And you say there's a GoFundMe page?
Yeah. If you go to Mark's Tuckabush Facebook, there's a link there where people can donate.
Excellent. Well, on that note, we come to the end of our program for yet another week, and it's been a pleasure to sit in for Ray today. But Ray will be back next week. Faye will have another fascinating week, I've no doubt, in your garden. Back with more stories next week. So we look forward to your company again. Thank you, Bev, and thank you, John, for working in the back room to keep this program moving. And thank you for listening. More next week at 8 o'clock in the morning, because you know where we are, and we will be here for you talking about things that are so important in our lives, in our gardens.
Thank you, Chris. Great job today.
Thank you very much, Faye. That's a big endorsement. Coming up coming up in just a moment, I was going to tell you what else is going on today, but why bother? He'll tell you. Jim is in the house.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to another edition of Let's Talk Gardening on Curtin Radio. Happy gardening.